Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross. We're drawing an audio highlight, as we usually do, through the arts, music, and culture of West Wisconsin. Today, it's Springfest in Chippewa Falls and the Valley Art Association presenting their Spring Art Fair right in the middle of it all. We'll meet Emily Ron, also known as Emily Page, when she's writing fantasy young adult novels at the ripe old age of 13. Jim Oliver shares a conversation with Katie Schumacher, directing Fiddler on the Roof for the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. We recognize National Poetry Month by spending time with two recognizable poets, with the last name Laureate, Bruce Taylor representing the city of Eau Claire, and Max Garland, the verse master for the state of Wisconsin. And let's set off on this week's expedition right here. Coming up Monday evening, the auditorium at Memorial High School in Eau Claire will resonate with young people expressing their musical teamwork during Essentially Eau Claire, featuring ensembles, combos, bands, and a guest soloist, Chippewa Falls native turned professional Tom Luer on saxophone. We talked via phone with Memorial Band Director Eric Dasher. First, let's get some perspective. Imagine how our days begin. We usually like to ease into them, hoping for very little commotion. Well, consider the high school band director. Certainly guys like Eric and Dennis Luganbill don't have brass instruments pointed at them first thing in the morning, do they?
We do. We've got actually kids playing first through sixth hour.
So do you have to get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to prepare yourself for first hour?
Like it sometimes. No, our first class starts at 7:40. Well, and that's actually not even true. Dennis teaches early bird jazz band. And his first class starts at 6:46.
No kidding.
Yep, and that's when Jazz 2 and 3 rehearse. So we've got kids playing from quarter to 7 all the way to about 2 o'clock.
Oh.
Because we have, just at Memorial, we've got over 300 kids registered for band, and then 100 of those kids come back for Jazz 1 through 3. And we're actually adding a jazz ensemble next year.
Coming up Monday, it's a concert. It's also a fundraiser. We'll get to the concert in the particulars, but for whom are we raising funds?
Any proceeds for this concert is actually going to go back to our middle school programs. Dennis and I, you know, when we started talking about this concert 3 years ago, we wanted to kind of give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very blessed here with an amazing band parent organization that really helps us out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle schools kind of don't have that. They send us amazing musicians every year. You know, the three middle school teachers that we have do a tremendous job. So we kind of wanted to give back. So basically all the proceeds are going to go to the middle school, North Star, DeLong, and South, for their music programs.
Since you brought up the middle school, let's talk about the common thread.
Yep.
You know, there is a common thread that runs through the Eau Claire community and the school system. How early does music start for young people in Eau Claire?
Primarily band and choir starts, and orchestra starts at about sixth grade.
Mm.
A lot of the orchestra plays will even start earlier than that with Suzuki strings, and you know, kids start piano elementary, but formally through the schools, we really get going in about sixth grade.
Talk about coordinating that music education. Do teachers at every level synchronize?
Well, we work very hard, and we meet a lot and just talk about what everybody's doing. And, you know, the great thing about it is we're kind of all on the same page with what the kids need to know in every grade. I just believe we've got quality teachers that just know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
They're great with kids, and man, I'm telling you, every year that new freshman class comes in, and they are just prepared, and we're very lucky to see what we get. And, you know, I think we kind of have a hidden jewel. Maybe it's not as hidden as I think it is, but I think we've got great music going on in our schools.
It might be a hidden jewel, but you guys polish it up and put it in a really nice setting every once in a while.
Well, I appreciate that.
So that's pretty cool. Eric Dasher is with us, Memorial High School Band Director. Third annual Essentially Eau Claire concert is Monday at 7 o'clock at the Eau Claire Memorial Auditorium. What a night of young musicianship coming up. It sounds like a lot of students from middle school right up into college have been working on this night.
Yep.
How many groups are on the bill?
Our three jazz bands will be playing, Jazz 1, 2, and 3. Uh-huh. South and DeLong will be playing, and then UWEC Jazz 1 will be playing. So a great night of jazz.
Special guest Tom Luer. He's a California guy now.
Graduate of Chi High. Got his high school experience there, and then went to University of Minnesota, and then University of Eau Claire.
And you said that Tom's already in town?
Yes.
Been working with kids?
Yep, just got done with a clinic with one of my bands, and he played for him, kind of told him his story. And, you know, because the biggest thing we want to get out to the kids is, you know, what it takes to play at his level and just the lessons that he learned and, you know, and to show the kids that sometimes it's an attainable goal. You know, if you want to play your instrument for a living, you can do that,
yeah.
You know, but you need to work hard, and this is somebody that's achieved that, and we want for him to give a roadmap to our students for that. And that's the biggest thing I think we get out of it, you know, as teachers, so mm-hmm. Yeah. Inspiration.
You have to think that the college students are role models for the younger kids, too.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Well, thanks for your time. We'll give the audience a particulars about the concert. Thanks.
Sounds
Keep up
great.
The good work. Get back to work.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Essentially Eau Claire, the concert and the fundraiser, Monday evening, 7 o'clock, the auditorium at Memorial High School in Eau Claire. Tickets at Morgan Music and Schmidt Music, and I'll bet they'll be for sale at the door, too. Remember, the proceeds get reinvested in future generations of young musicians.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. Fiddler on the Roof, a production of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, will run through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Diary of a Worm, A Spider and a Fly, runs Friday through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Lost in Yonkers, a production of the Menominee Theater Guild, will run Saturday and Sunday and next Wednesday through Sunday at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. UW-Eau Claire's Music and Theater Arts Department will present its production of Skyline through Sunday at the Riverside Theater and Haas Fine Arts Center at the University. The Fox and the Fairway plays Friday through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Show will run through May 4th. That Love and Feelin', the Story of the Righteous Brothers, will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will play Fridays and Saturdays and selected Sundays through August 14th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Go figure. A lot of cool things to do in West Wisconsin this weekend. One is Springfest in Chippewa Falls. And one aspect this year is a fine art fair, where the Valley Art Association takes over the Fine Arts Building at the Northern Wisconsin Fairgrounds and adds a creative visual component. Ruth Lundblad is a VAA member.
I do mostly watercolor and acrylic. I enjoy mostly trying to capture light, which is kind of exciting. It's one of the harder things to do. I enjoy experimenting with just about any kind of medium. There's so many
really?
Out there, yeah.
Like a playground.
It is, definitely a playground.
Were you an art educator? Were you a...
No, I was trained as a physical education teacher, actually.
Oh. Which is easier, Phi Ed or art?
Art, you can just kind of lose yourself in. I suppose you can lose yourself in exercising, too. But
well, you can. Art, you can get lost in exercising,
yes.
Too. But, you know, taking a jog and then forgetting which way you went.
Definitely.
The Valley Art Association began in 2006. Its beginning was because someone saw a need. Were you there at the beginning?
No, I was not. I came in about 2 years later.
Okay.
A group of people who thought there was a need for supporting the visual arts. I think one of the most interesting things about the Valley Art Association is their meetings. At the end of the meeting, which is usually very short, there's a presentation about some facet of art, mm-hmm. some facet of visual arts. There's usually a hands-on demonstration or slide presentation, and it's really interesting because we cover a lot of different mediums and a lot of different types of things.
You have a newsletter and a website, so no excuse for not having any information.
Correct. Correct.
Good for you.
Our website is under construction at this time. We're wanting to have a more interactive website.
If you love the arts, you can be a member.
You don't have to be an artist. You can enjoy the arts mm-hmm. and come and learn more about it at the meetings. When you do art, you need people that appreciate the art mm-hmm. as well as doing it.
And donations are tax deductible.
Yes. We just became a tax deductible organization a couple years ago, and
great.
So we appreciate that.
All right, so tell us, it's the reason you're here, about the Fine Art Fair. It's coming up this weekend, and it must be special because it's fair with an E, and that's always the lift your pinky
artistic,
time.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
The Valley Art Association for 5 years has put on a Fine Art Fair, but we did that at the Cook Rutledge Mansion, called it the Solstice Fair. Really lovely, and we had probably 30 to 40 vendors that were there, but we didn't get enough traffic, and so the Springfest organization asked us if we would like to join them. And we were looking for another venue for our fair, and so we decided we are moving into the Fairground Building A, occupying that with 60 artists, and it's going to be really fun. We've got 60 artists, very fine local artists.
You can buy art?
definitely. We would love you to buy art. And if you don't see something that you like, you can talk to the artist and have it commissioned, the piece commissioned for you.
Sure.
These are very creative, talented people interested in creating art that you would enjoy.
Is it just an exhibit, or will artists be working?
We have a demonstration of a wood turning that's going to be happening. And some of the artists may, in their booths, have some demonstrations. We don't have any scheduled demonstrations this year because we're so full. We did not expect to have a building quite that full at 60 artists.
Now, the particulars are Saturday from noon to 7, Sunday from 11 to 3.
Correct.
Building A is called a fine arts building, so you're going to the right place.
Yeah.
Tell me about what someone can do if they want to become a member of the Valley Art Association.
It's very easy. If you're at Springfest and you're in our building, we will hand you a membership application. Mm-hmm. If you're not, there should be within the next couple weeks at our website, valleyartassociation.org, membership sheet that you can fill out and mail in. Or you can contact me, and I would be more than happy to send a membership application for you.
I can tell that just by looking at you, that you would be more than happy to send that to people.
Yeah, our meetings are the first Thursday of the month in the Chippewa Library at 6:30. And anyone is invited. You don't have to be a member, but we would encourage you to join.
So you can just show up.
Yeah, just show up.
It's called the Fine Art Fair at Springfest, Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds. It's this Saturday and Sunday. Ruth Lundblad, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
For the record, Springfest itself actually begins Friday with gates opening at 5 p.m. and food, entertainment, live music, same thing Saturday and Sunday. Website addresses are valleyartassociation.org and springfest-cf.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Water Street Deli in Eau Claire. The deli will reopen May 7th. Fresh hummus, baba ganoush, and pita chips are still available at the Downtown Farmers Market and Just Local Food on Facebook and at waterstreetdeliandgrocery.com.
Spectrum West, thanks for being with us. We appreciate you being here. UW Eau Claire Music and Theater Arts Department presents a guest artist recital featuring the Banky Elhard Trio. Tonight, Thursday, 7:30, Phillips Recital Hall, Haas Fine Arts Center. Recorders, viola da gamba, and the harpsichord. Guest, Dr. Tulio Rondon, the UWEC faculty, will also appear on Viola da Gamba. It's free and open to the public. Well, you know, if your memory serves you that well, think about what you were doing at age 13. If it was enjoying the release of your first novel and having the second of your fantasy trilogy awaiting publication, well, it's fair to say you were in a minority. Yet, it's a group inhabited by at least one young lady who lives in our midst, Emily Ron. On paper, she's Emily Page. The first book available now, The Spirit Realm, was recently released. It introduces us to twin sisters Alicia and Amira and begins their fantastic story, filled with, as you might guess, spirits, mysterious powers, and very unique individual good guys and bad guys. Well, Emily recently stopped by after a normal day at DeLong Middle School.
People who visit me for an interview, and I interview a lot of artists and musicians and poets and directors and actors and authors, when I ask them how they got into it, and then I ask them if they remember back to when the spark ignited for them, they're a lot older than you are, they have to go back pretty far. You don't have to go back that far, so your memory's probably real good about it. So when did Emily get interested in writing, especially to the point you're writing for others?
Of course it started when I read, because I love to read and I wanted to kind of write and be like that. And then so I started this story, The Spirit Realm, and I was writing it and I actually wanted to finish it, which is kind of weird because I don't do that a ton.
And you started that a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And once I finished it, actually was like kind of long for the stuff I write. So I thought that this could actually be a book.
Let's get to that point where the spirit realm is finished. Was it at that point that you decided there were going to be three of them, or did you start out saying, you know, I'm going to do a trilogy?
I think I started out with a series or just more than one book in mind.
Uh-huh. How did you begin? Where did it all start? Because, you know, everything has a seed. Were these characters and these names and everything sort of swimming around in your head for a while? Then you decided to put it on paper?
I kind of had a base for the twins first, and with the names, I kind of had to just, I knew they were twins, so I wanted them to have, like, alliterative names.
Sure.
And with a lot of characters, I was just like, they're interesting characters, so they should have interesting names, like Myrata and Ixora and other characters like that.
I'm glad you pronounced those, because I didn't know how to pronounce them. What is that? Samaxti? Is that how it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
How do you come up with those?
Sometimes I take from different languages, like I did for the good side's name, Katya. But for the Samaxti, I usually take it from... Sometimes I like get inspiration from other series' bad sides, like Strigoi and other stuff like that.
So it's important for the good side's names to sound kind of good, and the bad side's name to be...
Yeah,
kind of crappy. The prologue of a book is always a good opportunity to get people to drool a little bit. And, you know, when I read the prologue in your book, it does that. It does a really nice job of getting me to say, I want to read more. It's 15 years in the past. We can tell people that at the beginning of the book. And a couple little girls have just made an entrance, not a usual entrance, though. You, within that prologue, also seem to have a knack for poetry. You've got this little poem in there. That's pretty cool. Now, do you write the book first and then do the prologue because you know what's coming and you say, I have to make these people have an appetite for what's coming?
Yeah, I wrote the story first and then I wrote the prologue because it just felt kind of short and just abrupt how it was. So I gave it a prologue because I just thought that it would sound better.
With us here on Spectrum West is Emily Ron. Her pseudonym, however, is Emily Page. And yes, a 13-year-old has a pseudonym. She's a seventh grader at DeLong Middle School in Eau Claire. She's written the first of what will be a trilogy. The first book is called The Spirit Realm, The Adventures of Alicia and Amira, who are twin sisters. I see you have the infinity symbol on the cover. What do you want us to know about that?
It's a very rare symbol for them to have it on where it is on the wrist.
Okay.
And it means infinite power for the people who have it. And the main characters also have it, so they become more of a force to contend with than I originally planned.
So they're going to be around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the fact that you have kind of fun coining new words and names. What pigeonhole does this book fit? Is this a fantasy? Is this a what?
Really fantasy, and there's a little bit of action, a little bit of romance, but mostly fantasy.
Do you sometimes fashion characters in the book after people you know?
I guess after I finished the story, I kind of realized that Amira, her at least her appearance, is actually based off of my older sister and brown hair, and that's really thick and curly.
Yeah, and you know, within your acknowledgments, you actually dedicate the book to your sister. And that is because what? She's kind of an inspiration for you? How much older is she?
Just 15 months. Whenever, like, I had a story idea or I was going through something really big in the story, I would be able to talk to her because, like, we just talk about stories all the time because she also really likes to write, too. So we just talk about writing. And so I figured that it really helped shape my books, so...
Furthermore, in your acknowledgement, you acknowledge your family. I mean, they have been very supportive in what you do. In what ways? They encourage you?
Yeah, and they really make me feel like I don't think I would be able to be as successful as I've been. I don't know if that sounded bad.
No,
but
so far so good.
If I hadn't really had their support and they compliment me, like they're proud of me. And I think it's really helped me.
Good. Back when I was in school, you know, English teachers taught form and sentence structure and stuff. And within your book, because books are meant to be written the way people talk, there are a lot of little three-word sentences, you know, which an English teacher would call an incomplete sentence. How about English teachers? Have they been involved? Have they helped you along the way? Was there an English teacher who inspired you to write?
A lot of them have been very helpful, like teaching me how to write better.
Sure.
So I guess it's all of them.
I think I know the answer to this, but what's more fun to write? The stuff where people do and say regular stuff or the kind of things you're writing in this book, the fantastic?
Definitely the fantastic stuff because there's no limits to where the story can go.
No kidding. I mean, I was going to say you let your imagination run wild because you came up with things like melting chairs and orange glowing staircases in closets. And there's even a dragon in there. How cool is that? How do you feel what you've done is shaped by what you've read? There's movies out there and there's trilogies out there. Are those things that sort of inspired you?
A lot of the romantic stuff that happens is based off of a lot of books. Like, there's a lot more tension than in normal life, I'm guessing. I don't really know. But
you will.
But I don't think I would be writing fantasy if I'm not into fantasy as much as I am now.
Sure. Tell me about the process of writing. As I read what I read, I was thinking to myself, you know, if I were a young person and I was Emily's age and I was really on a roll some night, it would be tough to put it down and go to sleep. Did that happen to you, where you were just looking forward to the next day when you could dive back in?
Yeah. One time I was in the middle of this really action-y part, and it was kind of in the evening, and I said to my mom, please don't, like, make me do stuff because I'm almost at the end.
How about homework? Is it tough to concentrate on homework sometimes?
Homework is, I just always do it, like, right when I get home, and writing's still a bit of a hobby for me, mm-hmm. even though it's kind of a job, too. I don't really know.
Yeah.
So homework always comes first in our house.
So that's good. I want that on the record, that's a good idea. When you write this stuff and you come up with the things that you're making up, do you have to kind of immerse yourself in a world of make-believe to come up with that? Or are you just rolling at the keyboard?
If I'm writing, like, a new theme in the story, like I finished a part and I'm going on to something else, I have to think what's going to happen next. But when I'm in the middle of a part, I'm pretty immersed in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So now how far are you on the thought process for the second book?
I've actually finished the second book, and I've sent it to my publisher, and we're actually in the process of editing it and getting it published.
What's their advice on how long you let a first book soak in before you release another one?
I'm not sure. I just know that the ending was kind of abrupt, so I don't really want to keep the readers waiting if they really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I would kind of like be able to get hype up for it.
You're hoping that people at the end of this first book, by the way, called The Spirit Realm, will say, I have to get the second one right away.
That's what I'm hoping.
And if they can't get the second one right away, that would be discouraging.
I have a lot of experience with that because I'm reading a lot of series right now.
Are you?
And I kind of hope that they don't have to wait too long, mm-hmm. because I've been waiting for a book for like a year. This is kind of silly. I just want to make sure that they get it out without getting impatient.
So now, Emily Page, the author, all right, you're only 13 now. Let's say Emily is looking out 10 years from now. What do you expect to do? What do you hope to do?
I'd like to keep writing, and I'd also, I don't know, I want to be an engineer or something, because I kind of like science and physics and stuff like that.
Math? Got to like math to be an engineer.
I think I could get through the math part because the science part's cool.
Well, actually, if you want to be an engineer badly enough, you take the math and you pass it. Well, Emily, thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it. Congratulations on this first book. Any indication from the publisher about the second one, or you just sent it in?
We just got through the second stage of editing, or the first stage of editing, and I think from this point it took like half a year, three months, I'm not sure. So I'm hoping it can get out by the end of this year.
Is that frustrating for a writer to work with an editor? I've heard two sides of the story. Sometimes it's an adversarial relationship. Other times the writer says they were a godsend.
I wasn't really sure like what was good writing in today's society. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of glad that my editor was a godsend.
Good. Well, again, congratulations and thanks for coming in, and all the best. Good luck with everything.
Thanks.
The book is The Spirit Realm, to be followed by The Spirit Shadow, and finally, The Spirit War. Who knows? We may have just spoken with the next J.K. Rowling. The book, by the way, is available at Amazon.com, also in Eau Claire at the local store, the Volume 1 headquarters. In the background, a bit of music from Harmonious Whale, who, by the way, will appear Saturday afternoon at 3 at Ladysmith High School, a presentation of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association. Also appearing will be the Gonzalo Bergara Quartet. It's kind of good tunage, don't you think?
Here's another Spectrum memo. It's an evening of theater by the Northern Lakes Theater Guild, Saturday and Sunday at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory. Showtime is 7:30. And the big 2014 Old Time Music Festival is this Saturday and Sunday at the Silver Dome Ballroom in Neillsville. Giants like Steve Meisner, the Rhythm Playboys with Howie Sturts, Craig Ebel, and Diversico, plus Carl and the Country Dutchman. The website is silverdomeballroom.net. Well, it's time once again for this week's Oliver Report, and it's about a classic musical staged by a classic theater group.
The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present the musical Fiddler on the Roof, opening tonight and running through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The director is Katie Schumacher, who joins us to talk about the play and anything else we can get her to talk about today. Fiddler on the Roof opened on Broadway in New York in 1964. It ran for a record-setting total of 3,242 performances. The record held for 10 years until it was surpassed by Grease. It's still the 16th longest-running musical in Broadway history. So what makes it so popular?
Oh, the warmth, the charm. Everybody likes a good story, and that's what Fiddler is, really a good story. We talk about our traditions. You know, this relates to Tevye and his traditions and trying to balance his religious beliefs with the changing of the times. Things haven't changed much as it is today.
In the early 70s, there was a movie came out. I've always wondered about this fiddler business. According to what I read about it, it's considered to be a metaphor. But we never see a fiddler in the stage production, or did you?
We do.
Oh, you do?
We do indeed.
Okay.
Mr. Dine Weibel is actually a violinist, and he will be playing it on top of the barn roof. He did come and audition like everybody else.
Oh, okay.
And when he got the role, it was, "So, Don, are you afraid of heights?" He said, over, 50 feet, we may have a problem.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Well, so tell us the story.
It's Tevye and his daughters. Basically, they live in a village called Anatevka. And this is in 1905, just before the Russian Revolution. As many societies today, the Jewish faith is always challenged. Well, it was challenged in that time period as well. And Tevye has to try to balance out his traditions and his beliefs, as I said. One daughter didn't ask for the matchmaker, got engaged on her own. The second daughter marries a radical. They just asked for Papa's blessing. And the third one, Tevye has the hardest time with. His daughter marries outside the faith. There's a very tender scene with that. He's talking about his daughter and one of the things I've staged and I'm very proud of, we see the daughter Hava come out in the younger forms and until she matures to what he sees her as today.
I think one of the most touching scenes is one of his daughters is leaving, the one who married the
Perchik.
Perchik.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
And that was just the saddest story because you knew she was leaving. They'd never see her again.
Very true, very true. I know Steve Bohr, who's playing Tevye, had a little bit of a time with that because when we were running the scene, I said, "Steve, think of it as your daughter Claire when she went to college and, you know, has gone on to do numerous things." So it's been real interesting that way.
Yeah. Who are the principal actors you mentioned, Steve Bohr?
Well, Steve Bohr, who's playing Tevye, Lois Hodgins, who's Golda. Lazar Wolf is Dave Cording. Yenta, dear Yenta, is Linda Peterson. And one of the different things that we're doing with the show is that we include all the daughters in many of the scenes, just not the older daughters.
Okay.
So it's quite nice, quite friendly. We have 53 in the cast, by the way.
Wow. That's quite a crowd. I'm going to ask you later on how you control all of this, but we'll get to that soon.
Sounds great.
Okay. She is Katie Schumacher, director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Fiddler on the Roof. Well, let's talk about the music. It's some of the most beautiful music in musical theater. So what are some of the more familiar ones?
Do You Love Me? Sunrise, Sunset, Tradition, If I Were a Rich Man, are some of the things. You will go out singing. Mm-hmm. One thing my father always taught me is when you are doing a musical, make sure that the music is wonderful and you go out of the theater singing. Mm-hmm. And this one, you will.
How about the people who make the music? Who's the musical director, the choreographer?
The musical director is a man named Kevin Peters. He contacted me and said, hey, I'm new into the area. We connected, and a delightful, wonderful man. He drives down from Bruce.
Wow.
So that's commitment. Mm-hmm. We have 24 in the orchestra, 24, 25.
Ooh.
Yes, the accordion you will hear this evening is really being played in the pit, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I wanted to do is make the orchestra be a part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you do the musicals, you've got your actors, you've got your set crew, and you've got your orchestra, and none of them mix.
Mm.
This particular show, everybody intermingles.
Mm-hmm.
They may be down below, but you will find them dressed as the villagers of Anatevka.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the people who are changing some of the set pieces.
Hmm. Story I heard once, moving on to choreography, was one of the most difficult things to choreograph, or to get actually the dancers to be able to accomplish, was the bottle dance.
Oh, I'm so excited for the bottle dance. You cannot believe it. The bottle dance. Josh Hyams Murray is doing the choreography for me. He and the four gentlemen are doing the bottle dance. With no net, okay.
Mm-hmm.
No tape,
right.
No nothing. They're doing it. They're balancing it on the hats.
Mm-hmm.
We did laugh during one of the rehearsals. We had two bottles break.
Oh.
It was quite the mess.
Really?
Because we do have liquid in them.
Oh, okay.
And so it got cleaned up, and we talked about if in case that would happen this evening or through the rest of the run. What we would do, but no, there will be no Velcro, anything like that.
Mm. The story I heard was about the original production, was there a number of dancers who actually lost their jobs simply because they couldn't do the bottle dance, because they wanted it done as you're doing it, with no artificial assistance.
Right. Very, very much so. And it's a difficult dance to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a troupe out in New York that's hired to do some of the Jewish ceremonies and festivals.
Mm.
I will be very honest. I would say my four boys could do it just as well.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Set design. Who's your set designer, set builder?
Well, my set designer, we kind of keep it all in the family. Ron Krinke is designing my set.
Hmm.
Bob Sessions is my master carpenter and builder. But Sue Haig is my master artist.
Hmm.
She came through and has done most of the artwork throughout the entire scenery and everything. They've put in a lot of hours. The neat thing is that I wanted a village. And the village I have is grandfathers, fathers, mothers, grandmothers, all working on this production.
Hmm.
One of the young ladies in the cast, her dad and grandpa, were building the set one day when I came in.
Hmm.
I have everybody in families. Normally when you're doing a huge show, you have, well, the chorus is here. Well, they all have their names.
Hmm.
They all have families, the blacksmith, the innkeeper's family, the weavers, the shoemaker's family. Of course, I had to put that one in there.
Well, of course.
And all these families have their own individual names. They do a lot together throughout the scenes. Mm. And like I said, we've got mothers and daughters, father and daughters, grandmother and a granddaughter, and in one entire whole family. So it's been really fun. The hard part for me is casting this show. Trying to make everybody look like a family.
Mm-hmm.
And that took quite a bit of time.
I was going to ask you about that just from beginning to end, because it is a difficult show to cast, I think, just because of what you said, that the families need to look alike, or at least look reasonably similar.
Correct. That's why we took photographs, and we placed the photographs on their audition forms. And we worked one night. After that, I took them home and looked at him again. And my sister, bless my sister, Sherry, I'm going, Sherry, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? We went back and forth and talked about it.
But it took me a good 3 days to really put this cast together. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the cast is 53. The orchestra is about 25. The rest of the crews, there are about 33. So we've got about 110 working on this production.
Wow. Community involvement, I guess.
It's community involvement. It took 6 weeks for them to work on the show. I worked on it for the past year.
Wow. We've been visiting with Katie Schumacher, director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Fiddler on the Roof. The show opens tonight and runs through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, you can call 715-832-PLAY. Katie, so nice to talk to you.
Oh,
thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Support for WPR comes from UW-Eau Claire's Department of Music and Theater Arts, presenting dance works, exploring global and contemporary dance and movement theater, May 1st through 3rd at Care Theater. Tickets at 800-949-UWEC.
Little Brian Setzer in the background. Spectrum West, I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us. Reminder, the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony is auditioning young musicians for next season on April 27th, the 29th, and May 1st. At Haas Fine Arts Center on the UWEC campus, you can get details at cvyouthsymphony.org. UW River Falls Theater presents Kwaidan, Strange Tales from East Asia, April 24th, that's today, through the 26th, and May 1st through 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in the Kleinpel Fine Arts Building. Information at the box office, the number is 425-3114, and online. The UW River Falls Rad Jazz Series presents Universal Language 10, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in Abbott Concert Hall. Information online at go.uwrf.edu/jazz. Well, this is National Poetry Month. West Wisconsin is the home of two poets laureate. Bruce Taylor carries the banner for the city of Eau Claire, and Max Garland wears the honor for the state of Wisconsin. To mark another National Poetry Month, we invited both gentlemen to discuss the craft they enjoy, teach, and represent. Both have overseen numerous projects, readings, and discussions at various libraries around our region and state. So let's join the trialogue. Where else would poet laureates hang out? At a library.
Those are good folks. I always said they put the community in community library.
And I have one more thing about the libraries. I've been traveling around the state reading at a lot of public libraries. And I tell people that a few years ago my heroes were writers and musicians and artists. But the more I've been around the state, the more my heroes have become friends of the library. Because they're the people who, for little or nothing, put together readings, donate money, give their time in times in which public places like libraries are strapped. And those people are doing it for nothing, like Bruce.
I went online and I said to myself, I'm going to try to find out who the 10 best poets of all time are. Now, you go and you'll find list after list after list. So what I did is I settled on the New York Times list.
The biggest, smallest town in America?
The number one was the Latin American poet, Pablo Neruda. Is that the way it's pronounced?
Yes.
He was on some other lists I found. He's new to me. I guess I'm...
Yeah. Yeah. My son, who has done immense amounts of traveling all over the world, he says that the two artists that everyone, particularly young people, everyone knows are Pablo Neruda and Bob Dylan.
Yeah. To me, Neruda is the Shakespeare of this hemisphere. People said, a South American poet once said, every time one of us writes a poem about something, we find that Neruda has already written a book about it. So, he's a giant.
And there's that wonderful story, I don't know whether it's apocryphal or not, of him being somewhere and someone asking for a poem that he didn't have a copy with him. So he thought he might remember it, so he started to, and he got lost halfway through, and like 200 people in the audience stood up and finished the poem for him.
I mean, the stature that Frost had, I mean, maybe the last poet in our country who was known by people who weren't really even literary at all. Yeah. I mean, that I think for much of the world, south of the U.S. border, Pablo Neruda is kind of times two or four, that kind of popularity.
Well, he must be big because number two was Shakespeare on this guy's list.
Well, this is an internet poll, so it must be true.
That's right. True.
Yeah.
Dante was his third pick, and it was his most controversial, I guess, because he's only known for one poem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
it's
Western.
It's a little longish.
A little bit, yeah. You have to go down into the bowels of hell
to
get there.
You sweat a little bit reading it.
And come back.
That's the tough
part.
That's
the tricky part.
Western literary greats like Walt Whitman, John Donne, Emily Dickinson, William Butler Yeats, Wallace Stevens also appear on the list, with Eastern favorites Rumi and Li Po.
Mm-hmm.
But then, gee whiz, I found the list of the most famous poets of all time. So then I thought, well, maybe I should talk to you guys about what's the difference between best and famous. Because here's the here's this other guy's list of the most famous poets of all time. Number one, he had Sir Walter Raleigh. William Shakespeare was second on this list, followed by Christopher Marlowe, Robert Burns, William Blake, William Wordsworth, Shelley.
An Anglophile, I think, is what we're talking about.
Exactly. Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Longfellow, Poe.
The only fun things to argue about are matters of taste, someone once said, you know, because you cannot really, you know, convince anyone of something like this.
At number 11 of that list was a guy named, and you guys are going to know who it is, I didn't, Bukowski.
Sure. He was very popular for a while. Still is, I think, with a lot of people.
And as a former rural letter carrier, I did appreciate the fact that he was a former postal worker.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Wrote a really gritty, grungy novel called Post Office.
He didn't have a good life.
No, there's a Mickey Rourke portrays him
in a great movie.
In a great movie called Barfly.
Barfly, it's a great movie.
And Bukowski wrote a lot of, he was sort of the, I'm writing this on a bar napkin kind of poet very often, and some wonderful insights in revealing, and then some stuff that probably should have just stayed on the bar napkin.
Sure.
That kind of thing.
Or never got there.
Someone wrote about him, he was called the Laureate of American Lowlife.
Well, there are other people that would fight him for that.
I think a lot. I think Poe might have been in the running for that and quite a few others, yeah.
Folks come and go, too. You know, I think of when I grew up, the poetry book was a Louis Untermeyer anthology, you know, and it was this big. Right. It was this huge thing. And I still have my original copy of it. So I went back and looked at it sometime recently and went through the table of contents. And, of course, about half of these people would be on both of those lists. Everybody would know them. And the other half, no. You know, they just went away. And, you know, these were people who maybe, I'm not quoting this exactly or the exact statistics, but, you know, Frost might have 4 pages, and these people would have 12 in the Untermeyer anthology. Right. And they're gone, you know?
I mean, there was a time in which the two probably most well-known American poets were Robert Frost and Carl Sandburg.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Frost went out of fashion. Sandburg went out of fashion. Frost has been rediscovered and reappreciated a little more by the academic world and by others, whereas Sandburg, he has not made his way back up into in the kind of appreciation and popularity that he had.
It's almost to a certain degree that popular and best – in some people's minds, fight each other, that it's not possible to be a very good poet if you're really popular.
Exactly. Yeah, and that worked against Frost in the academic world, the fact that he was loved and popular. Other things, Edna St. Vincent Millay was a huge rock star poet in the early in the 20th
Rachel
century.
Lindsay.
And I think that, and she had a dramatic life, a very interesting biography, you know, full of scandals and such. And so I think it caused a lot of people to underestimate her actual poetry as well.
Can you be popular and good? Well, there are a lot of folks that don't think that that's possible, you know.
We're in the studio celebrating National Poetry Month with Bruce Taylor. He's the Poet Laureate of the City of Eau Claire. And Max Garland, Poet Laureate, State of Wisconsin. So as I'm thinking about National Poetry Month and why we've designated a month for it, what should I be thinking?
I think you should be thinking of all the people that write poetry that probably will never be famous or popular. I think the act of – that's one of the revolutionary things, or at least it's probably gone on before to such an extent, but I think it's more out in the open now. We have open readings, you know, here in Eau Claire. We have to turn people away. You know, we have person after person who writes poetry on a regular basis, not because they get it published, not because they teach it, mm-hmm. you know, because they love writing it.
And I think the other thing, I agree with what Bruce said about what we should be thinking about, but the other thing is not only in words lined up on a page, not only in things sure. that you say in an open microphone, but poetry is much older than print. It's much older than microphones. It's much older than recorded alphabets or the printed page. I mean, poetry is that way that we have tried since we crawled out of the slime to, you know, express what it means to be alive and what it means to be human. And it exists in poetic passages in novels. It exists when we really get going in conversation and sort of succinctly sure. in a compressed manner say a whole lot in a short space.
Films,
it's in
paintings,
songs, paintings, right? All of these kind of things. It's even in our ordinary daily thought when something strikes us and we know that it's important, that it's part of who we are, but we can't quite find the words or we struggle for the words to say it. Whether we say them or not, we're in the vicinity of poetry when we recognize that that's a part of human experience.
Yeah,
and
moments,
so that to me is important to know that it is a part of what it means to be human, whether it ever expresses itself and whether anyone remembers it or whether it's called famous or not. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the Us Magazine, People Magazine view of poetry, what's famous or
sure.
what isn't.
I have a shtick that I've done for years, a sort of a presentation, which is, I can't even remember the name of it, but it's something like why poetry is important even if you never read any. You know? And
sure.
I think that's sort of one of the things yes. Max is talking about here.
Should Bob Dylan and Burt Bacharach and Andrew Lloyd Webber, should they be able to call themselves poets?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan should win the Nobel Prize as far as I can see.
Even yes. though it's always music?
Well, music is one of the things that is essential to poetry.
Yeah.
Even though throughout most of human history, if you had invited two poets here, we would have had to bring a drum
or
a lyre, a small stringed instrument, and we would have chanted or sung. And
we could still do that.
We could still do it. It wouldn't be a pleasant experience, no. perhaps, but all of that saying, you know, is Bob Dylan a poet? Was Joni Mitchell a poet? Is, you know, any sort of rap artist a poet, a really good, intelligent
yeah.
one? No ancient poet would dispute that at all.
Yeah.
They might dispute whether, if we don't sing,
yeah.
whether that could be
yeah,
called poetry.
Sure. And, you know, it's, you know, at some point we decided when we could write or writing came about or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, for certain circumstances, we were going to separate the words from the music.
Right.
You know, and so that you see words on a page and think somehow that that's different than the words with the music and the same thing.
Right.
You know, the words are the music and the music is the words, I think.
We've been so deep, I have a silly question for you. All our lives, we've made up stupid endings to roses are red, violets are blue. Is there a famous poem that has those words?
Google it.
That's interesting. I don't know. It's been parodied so much. I mean, it probably came from a comment upon that metaphor. My love is like a red, red rose or something like that. And it probably was maybe a mnemonic device or maybe a comment upon something that was a part of poetry itself, I suspect, but I don't really know. I'm sure that there's a place. Only, somebody's claiming
yeah, sure.
that.
Only second to I'm a poet and don't know it. My
right.
feet are long, fellow.
Oh, there you go. I always wondered why laureate was only applied to poetry, though. Why there aren't plumber laureates?
Plumbers get paid. That's one of the differences.
Yeah, laureate is Latin for not getting paid.
Exactly.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Cumulatively, has it been a pleasant surprise being a poet laureate?
I had always thought that when I retired, I would do some sort of volunteer or something, and I have a very limited skill set, you know. So, this is something I know a little bit about and, you know, have done, and I'm glad to share it with people right here and, you know, local.
We live in a state with a long, rich artistic heritage, which has had its art support on the state level cut by about 70%. That is one of the things that gets cut in this sort of new idea of maybe undercutting the whole idea of public education. And to me, that would be a tragedy and really stealing from the young people in the state if we do not support the life of the imagination and creativity and do what our parents and grandparents did for us, which was, you know, give us a ladder towards, you know, fully utilizing our imaginations and our creative energies. And what I want to do is just sort of not pull up the ladder after me, but say that we need this as much as we need a little more money in the bank book.
So there's someone out there listening who has never been an aficionado of poetry. How do they begin? Just pick up a book?
Very few people have not had a brush with poetry, even if they didn't recognize it as poetry. But I would say yes. I would say look at the anthologies. I mean, Gary Snyder, one of the last surviving beat poets, has a line in some poem. It says, "Taste all and hand the knowledge down." And I think that everybody has language, everybody recognizes the rhythms in language, and that some ways of putting things are more meaningful and contain more than others. And I think you trust that, for one thing. And if you begin to write and it's not that good, it's not like architecture. You don't have to live with it. You can throw it away. But it's also like a lot of other human endeavors. The more you do it, the better you get. And sometimes those, after long practice, those things you do for yourself become of interest to other people.
Max Garland, Poet Laureate, State of Wisconsin. Bruce Taylor, Poet Laureate, City of Eau Claire. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, that was fun. Remember, you can hear all Spectrum West segments at the WPR website at WPR.org. Click on Shows. Once Upon a River, the sixth tribute to Earth Day at on the St. Croix River is scheduled for Saturday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Showtime, 7:30 p.m. Shell Lake Art Center, don't forget, 6th Annual Piano Festival is coming up Saturday. Thanks for hanging out with us here on Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week, we'll focus some attention on spring art tours, an impressive music scholarship, and more. You know what? Always more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Have a good Friday. If you're listening on Friday, have a great weekend. See you next week.